It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome to the big show. Looking forward to filling in here for Dory. Looking forward for a return. And it's just an honor to be here on the best show in Seattle, even in a fill-in basis. A poor substitute, I know, for the glories of Dory, but still, it's good for me to be here. All right, let's start with the ballot disappearance in Sammamish. There has been numerous ballots stolen in the city of Sammamish. Sammamish police are warning voters to make sure they've received their ballots. The police received a call from a cyclist, according to a King 5 report, who found a bag full of stolen mail that had ballots mixed in along the East Lake Sammamish Parkway. And someone else reported a handful of ballots thrown along the side of the road as well. A representative from the Redmond Post Office also reported that a worker found about 35 ballots in an outgoing mailbox where they didn't belong. Quote, they had discovered several ballots that didn't belong in a kiosk mailbox, one of the large ones for an apartment complex, and they weren't for that address, and that piqued their suspicion. All of the ballots were still sealed, and Sammamish police went ahead and delivered the ones they'd recovered. The post office was going to re-deliver the ones that ended up in the mailbox. So they suspect that this was a big mail theft. Now, part of me, you know, you read it and you think, well, wait a second. Sammamish, high income, more conservative leaning than other parts of King County might be. Could there be something here? And yet, it's my experience that also you've got a lot of mailboxes that are not locked. And let's face it, if COVID-19 weren't here, we'd be talking about the opiate addiction that's still out there. We've got people that are encamped in public spaces galore, and they're looking to steal identity, credit cards, anything they can use of value in the mail. And the ballots, while they might be valuable to some, they're not all that valuable to them. So they toss them out. I've had my mail stolen, you know, a couple of times. In fact, I painted this post, you know, one of those treated lumber posts. I painted it. I gave it about 8 coats because I really wanted it protected when I put it in the ground. I want to, you know, kind of maximize its strength. And I was going to put up my locked mailbox and the post disappeared. I have no idea where the post is, you know, but to protect my mail, I created a great post and now the post itself is gone. So anyway, you just can't win in my neighborhood, but I've had my mail stolen. I've seen it, you know, portions of it thrown out. I found mail at the park. This is happening everywhere. So it does not look like an election conspiracy to me. Although, to be fair, most conspiracies aren't supposed to look like the conspiracy that they actually are, right? I mean, Watergate, they didn't leave a card that said, you know, Nixon was here. It was designed to be something else. So it looked like something else. So anyway, it's bound to happen. It'll cause people additional suspicion. And I think it adds to the people that are dropping off their ballots directly at the ballot boxes. I know that's what I plan to do just because, you know, ultimately I'm going to drive by anyway. I don't even like early voting. I find it strange because you never know what's going to happen, what new information you're going to get. So I miss the old days when we had an actual election day. But I think this year is going to be my first year where I'm going to vote ahead of time. And it's mainly to avoid phone calls and to help out those that I do like. They don't have to keep calling me and asking, did I turn my ballot in? You know, the reason they're doing that to you is because they have a record that shows where ballots have been turned in. They just don't know how you voted. So if you're likely to have voted in favor of someone, that campaign or people who support them are going to keep calling you until you turn that ballot in. So you don't want to get called. Don't blame the person calling you. Just turn the ballot in and then you'll be safe. You know, you can mind your own business after that. And everything will be good. All right. Next on the Fastest 15, a man using, they claim, I should say, that he was reportedly using some substances, mind-altering substances. The sheriffs say a man destroyed his trailer home when he was trying to scare away a family of raccoons that was driving him crazy living underneath his trailer. He apparently tipped over a candle at some point in the commotion after his frustration reached a tipping point, pun intended, and it caused a commotion. The candle ignited a larger flame. The trailer caught fire. And when the firefighters arrived, it was mostly consumed in flames. Unsure if the family of raccoons escaped without incident, but it is suspected that they were among the first to leave. The other individual was still there taking a look. Now, when you hear this story, where do you think it happened? My first response was Florida. My second response, I think, would have been Illinois. But it was here. It was in Benton County, Washington, where an individual managed to wreak havoc upon his trailer. It looks like it could be up to a $7.70 damage done with this fire. It's not a good-looking place. Doesn't look like it was probably all that great beforehand. And if drug use is leading you to do battle with raccoons and tip over candles in your highly flammable area, odds are there's not a lot of valuables left there. But it's still a sad situation, and it's a reminder that COVID isn't the only problem that we're having. It's just one of many. And by the way, before you say, it wouldn't necessarily take drugs in order to freak you out if things were living in your walls or underneath your house. Those things make a lot of noise, a lot of scratching. And the first house I ever bought had rats, and I had to get rid of the rats. And I first noticed it because as I was asleep, you just heard the constant gnawing of the wood. And it's, if you've never had it happen to you, it is super annoying. I mean, it's like a torture. And so all I could think of was, I'm going to do whatever it takes to kill whatever's in the wall here. And so, you know, in this case, it required the guy had to burn the place down. So he did it. A woman was filmed feeding a bear on TikTok and decided to share it. This should be filed under people who share too much category. Because she's in the state of Virginia, it is illegal to feed the bears in Virginia, the wild animals. And she's holding out this little piece of watermelon so the bear can walk up and eat it. And the bear is having a perfectly good time of it. She's enjoying feeding the bear. It looks so cute and cuddly. And here's the thing. TikTok even put this up that, you know, serious harm can come from engaging in the behavior in this video. Although I don't know why they felt compelled to say that, since it seems like serious harm can come from just selfies. How many people have fallen off cliffs in the last, say, 30 days trying to get a selfie out in nature? But she's holding up this watermelon. She's feeding the bear. Again, this is like the lady who was swimming with the great white shark and holding on to it. It's really cool and really awesome until it isn't, right? Because eventually, just like the video we talked about last week with the cougar chasing after that guy for about a mile because he thought, hey, there's a couple of baby cougars up ahead. I'm going to walk up and get a better picture of them. Really, really, really stupid idea. And so much has been made of the cougar following him all that length of time. But most of that was because she's ticked off because, you know, he got close to the babies. Don't mess with a mom and her babies ever. And so, you know, in this case, the bear is friendly. But let's say you run out of watermelon and the bear is still hungry. What might he do? If he associates your hand with food, you know.
I think so. The video. You just never know what you could get charged with. Like she's getting. I mean, it's a pretty big punishment, and it's just this TikTok video. She thought she was just posting a funny little TikTok.
I know. I wanted to add to that too, because it's like, okay, should you have done it? No, was it stupid? Sure, but I also this is one of those examples where we need some criminal justice reform here, because. You know, she gets charged and she's got a facing a $500 fine and a jail sentence of up to 6 months. Do you or I, do we really want to pay whatever the cost would be for these doggone pop-up ads? Would you want to pay to put somebody like this in jail? Do you consider her a danger to society? You know, so we should shell out thousands of dollars and disrupt her life, probably force her to lose her job because, you know, she fed the bear. I mean, I know it causes problems. You know, the bear can interact with other people, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, for crying out loud, you know, she posted the video, call her up, tell her she gets a fine and move on, you know. And $500, let's calm down here. I mean, $500 is a lot of money for me. It's even more money for people who make less than me and even more money for people who make less than that. I feel like we kind of just go straight for the huge fine when – maybe a little education would go a long way here. Just a reminder, the reason why we don't have you feed the bears is because they could walk up and hurt other people or children ultimately because you're getting them used to human interaction. And you could also get eaten. So I don't know. I just feel like we go straight for the huge fine on dumb things like this. And yet, you know, in Seattle, we're firebombing people. And then we say, you know what? We may or may not need to punish them or prosecute them. It's a bizarre system that we have. Is it not? So next up, a 14-year-old may have found a cure for COVID. She's so awesome. This is a story from CNN, making CNN worth reading again. Anika Chebrolu, she was researching for a science fair project, originally seeking for a cure for the flu. And then she decided to switch it over to COVID because she saw so much suffering. She just sounds like one of the world's greatest kids, kind of like the kid who went to Georgia Tech at the age of 12 that we talked about last week. Listen to her describe her science experiment, what she's managed to do.
It's exciting. I'm still trying to process everything.
A potential cure to the influenza virus.
Meet Anika Chebrolu, who at the ripe old age of 14 recently won the 3M Young Scientist Challenge and $25,000. It's for her work on a cure for COVID-19, or as she more accurately puts it.
And I developed this molecule, which can bind to a certain protein on the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And this protein, by binding to it, it'll stop the function of the protein. So I started with a database of over 698 million compounds.
Anika was only in middle school when she entered the contest months ago and originally planned her project to involve seasonal flu. She later changed it to COVID-19 and says she was driven by the scope of the pandemic and the people who were suffering.
And we just always have this constant fear, like who's going to get infected by the coronavirus?
I absolutely love the story, and I love her whole attitude. Everything about the story, by the way, made me feel dumber. You know, it made me think every good grade I got in high school was an overstatement, right? Because kids like this are out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think
incredible.
My science project was a frame that I put a level in, so it was a self-leveling frame. Ooh, fancy!
Yeah, wow, You purchase something and glued it to something else. my kid's an honor student. I'm putting you on the bumper sticker, Nicole.
Right?
And I'm sure I did something roughly the same. You know, like I'm gonna do that baking soda volcano again because I like how it makes noise and makes fake lava. Just it's. I even think mine was less. I think I showed off a spider collection now that I think about it. So basically, I went around collecting bugs,
nice.
dropped them in alcohol, and then labeled them, you know. So good times versus this 14-year-old.
Places.
Yeah, solving a world pandemic. You know, she might have just found a $1 trillion idea. Hey, what are you up to? Oh, my gosh. And then I like how her idea is relatively simple. I mean, I don't know how it's going to hold up, though. I'm sure a lot of people are interested, and they'll take a look and you know. Or there's a pharmaceutical company right now like, oh, crap, we almost had our own vaccine, and now this is going to ruin it. Let's buy it and sit on it, you know. So anyway, she's done this. I'm just joking, by the way. I think they'd publish it. But this young lady has just done, you know, it's just you can just see her mind is excited about learning. You hear about her grandpa encouraging that learning. And you see where that's coming from because she has a culture of, hey, learning is great. Learning's awesome. Same thing with the kid last week. You know, he was a genius, so he had a super genius. So he has some unique innate abilities. But also he had a family that just said, hey, you know what? We need to encourage that. We need to, you know, stimulate that desire to learn and the capability of learning so that they get the most out of life and that the world gets the most out of them. You know, and I think that's, you know, that's something that we should pay more attention to. I'd love to see where it'd be cool if they did some kind of follow up on, you know, where the kids ended up, you know, because you read about these kinds of things and then, you know, 10 years go by and you sit there and at least I do. And I wonder whatever happened to that person, what are they doing? What are they achieving? You know, and they're probably in a lab somewhere. So we're not really going to read about it. But that doesn't mean it's not fascinating and earth changing. So. A 14-year-old may have found it for the science fair. God bless the science fair there. Hopefully she's right. Trump should call her and congratulate her today, right? I mean, shouldn't he just, hey, you know, he'll replace Dr. Fauci with her. just say, hey, I've got a better candidate. We'll get into more of that later. And finally, here on the Fastest 15, you know, we hear a lot about police officers, defunding police officers. Police are supposed to be all bad, systemically bad, horrible bad. They're not necessarily bad by themselves, but the system's so bad that they're all bad by definition. I'm not buying it, of course, but some do. Now, listen to what first of all, we've got a news story about a guy who's standing, getting ready to jump off a parking garage, and he is, you know, distraught. He's suicidal. He starts to make a move that he is going to act and take his own life, and the police go into action. You can hear it all here.
Police body cam video shows six Atlantic City police officers confronting and saving the life of a man they say was suicidal. You'll hear him upset as he's FaceTiming someone while on the top of a parking garage on Wednesday night.
Yeah, because she don't care, right? She don't care, right?
She doesn't care.
You know what, man? You know what?
Well, it's at that moment the officers rush in to grab the man.
You're okay. You're good. All right?
You're okay.
You're good.
All right? We're here for you. Okay? We're here.
No, I can't.
Because I love you. All right?
He's right here.
He's right here. Even though I don't know you, I love you. All right?
Extraordinary moment there. The officer saying, I love you. We are happy to report that man is getting help now. Officer Eric Nuttall engaged him in that conversation. Nothing short of a hero there. And five other officers also jumped in, assisting in saving that man.
You know, it's interesting what a big deal it's become that the officer said, I love you. You know, I mean, is it possible to love people that you don't know? Sure it is. You love people. You're commanded to do so. You know, I mean, at least by most faiths, and specifically the Christian faith, you're commanded to love others. And this officer, you know, I don't know his background, I don't know who he is, but he rushes up. The fellow who was suicidal was African American. Officers, at least the individuals I could see on the tape, were white. And you know, it was brave, because if he would have moved forward and fallen off that wall, it's possible he could have taken the officer with him. But he just rushes forward. Little regard to his own safety, saves this man, calms him down, says he loves him. You can hear in the background, if you increase the audio, there's a lady just shrieking and worried that they're going to hurt him. And it was just kind of sad, because her whole disposition seems to be the officers are there to hurt him, and all they're trying to do is hold him, you know, and they're even trying to be extra gentle. You can hear the officer saying, don't hurt him. We got to just calm down, sir, just calm down. We're here to care for you. We're here to love you. You know, it's a beautiful thing. David Bowe's in for Joy Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Joy Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. We got one big, really big ballot issue that we'll be looking at. For those of you who've already received your ballots, just about to receive your ballots, or have had your ballots tossed in a ditch somewhere and you live in Sammamish, there is a referendum, and it's Referendum 90. It would repeal Senate Bill 5395, and it would that's the so-called comprehensive sex education law. And you take a look at a lot of the editorials around the state, like that of the Seattle Times or elsewhere, and there's kind of this, shucks, this is, I don't know why these folks are complaining. This is just, you know, pure basic sex ed. So, you know, folks should just ignore this thing or not vote to repeal it. And you know, again, I look at the same material, and I'm wondering what these folks are thinking. Here to talk about it with us is Kim Wendt. She's co-founder of Informed Parents of Washington. They're spearheading the effort to repeal Senate Bill 5395. So if you opposed that law, you would want to vote to repeal on Referendum 90. Kim, thanks so much for making the time on the Dory Monson Show.
Thank you for having me, David. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, again, when I look at some of the op-eds of some of the major newspapers, the general attitude seems to be, well, there's much ado about nothing. This is just a normal, the usual kind of sex education that kids need in order to live healthy lives, and it's all age appropriate. Where would you start? Where would you point people to start to say, you know, that this is not the story, and that they're buying into a line that is not the reality?
Well, I would say that I would like people to know that the people opposing this bill and asking you to check reject are not against sex ed in school. We are not for abstinence only. There is common ground here, and this bill is not it. And you can see it by actually looking at the curriculum that the state has deemed age appropriate and medically accurate and is on their approved list for use in the schools. And that's how we have started to wake parents up to what they want to teach our children by simply buying or downloading the curriculum, reading it, and then posting examples on our Facebook page of what they want to teach your children. So and what I hope people will understand is it's not, any kind of sex ed your school board wants. It is cherry picking one rather extreme version of sex ed, known as comprehensive sex ed. So if your school already has a program in place that they like and it's not rooted in comprehensive sex ed, you will no longer be able to use that. So it's actually removing choices from school boards and parents and forcing them to choose this specific method known as comprehensive sex ed.
Now, it's funny to me because I was watching the debate about school funding when the Republicans and a few Democrats controlled the Senate as the majority coalition caucus. And when they were working out a compromise to satisfy the McCleary requirements and they came up with a funding mechanism, the left was awash with people, with legislators saying, my gosh, this would interfere with local control because it's a state. The state would provide the funding. It gets rid of the majority of the local levies for basic education and goes for state. And just to point out, the state constitution makes education the top priority. So the reason for this move to state funding was because constitutionally education is paramount duty of the state, not the locality. So there's all this concern about local control. But then when this thing comes along and you've got, the top down legislator saying, well, we can't have local people choose what they want and we can't have parents choose what they want or communities choose what they want. We're going to create this this kind of top down mandate. Suddenly all that goes away, all this concern about local control when it actually counts. And instead it's, we can't trust them to make these kinds of education decisions. It was only when it came to dollars that we wanted more locals, because obviously they're seeking more dollars. So, have there been anybody who's been in support of you who might actually prefer this kind of curriculum, but basically stands on a principle that, parents are ultimately the best local control and the community should be able to decide for themselves. Do you get a lot of that, or has that kind of disappeared?
Well, those are the people that we're really trying to reach, the people in the middle. And there are a lot of, we are with our Facebook page and are showing people what this is. People are starting to take notice and say, well, shoot, that's not right. And I mean, to give you an analogy of what this bill is doing, it's like telling your school board, hey, school board, you can have any kind of pizza you want. You can serve any kind of pizza you want, so long as it's anchovy. So, you can have Domino's or Pizza Hut or Papa John's, and hey, school boards, if you want, you can even make your own, pizza, but it has to be anchovy. And before you can actually serve it, OSPI has to come in and look at your ingredients to make sure that it's okay. And this is the only curriculum in the entire state, not math, not science, not social studies, not reading, that has to be reviewed before it can be taught in the school. So we're giving OSPI the ability to set the standards and then force, without any choice, their specific agenda and viewpoint into every school in the state.
I saw a column or a write-up recently that said this referendum 90 is going to it's going to determine what the power of conservatives is in Washington state. And I thought that was a mistake because it seems to me that the people objecting to this don't necessarily fall under the conservative label, because there's a lot of parents out there that, it's kind of like when it comes to movies, there's some parents that'll let their kids watch anything. I saw, a parent allowing their, it looked like between 8 and 10 year old kids to rent some Halloween movies that looked like, Saw or some awful stuff like that. And I thought it was grotesquely irresponsible. Some parents, do grotesquely irresponsible things. But on others, there's Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and others that might decide, if the kid's, under 12, I'm sticking with PG or G. And, that just because they're sticking with that doesn't make them, quote unquote, conservative. What's you know, do you find that you're stuck appealing to one side of the fence, or do you have people coming to you saying, look, on most things, I roll with the state, but on this one, I think the line's been crossed.
Well, we have definitely had those people communicate with us through our webpage and our Facebook. Yesterday I just had a social worker say, I've always been a progressive, but looking at the curriculum here and knowing what's already starting to be taught in the schools, this is inappropriate. And so it's not about whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, or if you're conservative or you're liberal. It's about the sexualization of children at incredibly young ages. And the fact that this is being mandated all the way down to elementary school is, quite frankly, I think very telling at what is happening here. And if you kind of look at who's pushing the bill, it is Planned Parenthood. And, you know, no one will call them out, but they are paid by the government to write and help train the teachers. They come into the classrooms to be guest speakers, which you're, according to the opt-out in the bill, you're not allowed to opt out of guest speakers. They don't have to warn you of that. If you look through our flash curriculum examples, they're referenced as a place to go without parental consent for all of their services 41 different times. And then when they get your kids into their clinics, they're making a profit off their children, off of all our children. And to me, this seems like a gross violation. I mean, I cannot believe there's not some law that's being violated here that you're allowed to teach one viewpoint of sex ed and then make money off the children.
I'll tell you, one thing that fascinates me about this campaign has been things like the lawsuit that Superintendent Reichdahl launched against trying to stop the voter pamphlet statement from Maya Espinoza, the other OSBI candidate who supports your effort to repeal this so-called comprehensive sex ed law. And you know, he was upset because the way she described his supporting this in fairly graphic terms. And Reichdahl said, well, that's not fair because that's not the curriculum. It's just one of the resources that is recommended by the curriculum. And I thought, on what planet would that be an excuse for any politician other than in Washington State? Because it strikes me as bizarre.
And if you go, again, look at the examples that we have. So we're not just reviewing one. There's a list that OSPI has conveniently provided. And we've been buying them and downloading it and posting examples from all of the curriculum. So that's how I know it's Domino's, you know, Papa John's or Pizza Hut. They're all anchovy. Okay. So you can go find any number of examples of asking for websites to be or firewalls to be brought down to take your children to websites called like Scarlet Teen, where they can learn about bondage and why people look good in porn. And those stories are not written by any medical professional. They're actually written by other teenagers to help influence your own children. And we are literally pulling the stuff out of the curriculum. So again, it is not about, you know, should we have sex ed? Everyone on our side thinks we need responsible sex ed. We are saying this bill is not it. And I just want to point out the other thing that always happens is like, well, you can opt out. That language is in the bill. But the thing about comprehensive sex ed, it is meant to be integrated into all classes. And we put forth multiple amendments to say, hey, you know, if you're going to teach sex ed, we want it at a defined time in the classroom that parents are getting a true opt-out. And that was rejected. We wanted some of this curriculum I don't want to talk about it. But if you can picture, a 12-year-old girl in a co-ed classroom with a male gym teacher being told that it's important to know co-bathing is an appropriate STD-free activity that will help build cohesion in your relationships. If you think that's appropriate, you know, that's what your kid's going to get. And if your kid is uncomfortable, we tried to put an amendment forth saying they could opt themselves out of the material, and that was rejected. There were 29, I mean, completely reasonable amendments that every one of them was rejected down party line to try and make this bill more stomachable for the parents opposed to it. So it, I'm telling you, it's an agenda, and we're sincerely asking you to come and see for yourself. Come to Inform Parents of Washington. Look at our Facebook page. Look at what we're posting on our webpage and see if this is what you want taught to children in our schools.
See, and that's the kicker right there is, you know, when I read these editorials or statements from people supporting this nonsense, and they'll claim that, oh, well, it's, you know, the people that are upset, prudes. And then you go to the website and you actually look at it. It's like, well, did the people writing this stuff, did they ever bother to actually look? And why is it supposed to be wrong to go and take the materials that are actually recommended? It's right there. You don't have to make them up. You know, I mean, they're the ones that are providing the links. They're the ones that are providing the materials. You show it and say, this is the stuff being sent off to kids. And, you know, and then when you point it out, it's like, well, you know, that's unfair. You're pointing out something that this is biased. It's not biased. It's just a fact. It's right there. So
if I hear Claire Wilson say one more time that, oh, they won't use that lesson, I think my head's going to explode, really, because, I mean, how
why
do
is
you
it
know?
There?
How do you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you yeah, open the door for this stuff to be brought into the schools. And I will, we just posted today on our Facebook page what happened down in Oregon, where this is already passed. You can look at examples, you know, from what's happening in other states. They had a group come in and teach kids the difference between pain and pleasure and sex. And if you see the pictures that were shown, you would be shocked. And there are some parents that are seriously upset that this was in the classrooms. But the problem is, unless you look at the curricula ahead of time before you approve or reject this bill, you're not going to find out until it's already in the classroom.
So what you got to do is make sure you go to the Informed Parents of Washington webpage or their Facebook page. Actually look at the materials themselves. You can see the Oregon exercise of it there. I take it the pictures are there, Kim, for people to see.
Yeah.
So we can all check it out there. And before you mark your ballot, just check that out. And then when you do mark your ballot, if you want to dump this comprehensive sex education, you vote repeal. Am I correct there?
Yeah. Check reject on R90 to repeal this law.
Yeah. So it's a weird thing, but you've got to say reject so that you can repeal this particular law. Kim Wendt is the co-founder of Informed Parents of Washington, trying to keep you informed. Thanks so much for making the time here on the Dory Monson Show, Kim.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate your help, David.
You bet. This is David Bowes filling in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.
Cairo Radio, here for What's Next.
Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. David Bowes filling in. Looks like Jeffrey Toobin, chief legal correspondent for CNN and writer for The New Yorker, has been suspended from The New Yorker because, according to Vice, he exposed himself during a Zoom call last week between The New Yorker staff and WNYC Radio. You just sit here and wonder, first of all, it's a sad testament that it surprises me that this is not more common now, but I wasn't expecting Toobin to be the guy. He said in a statement, I quote, "I made an embarrassingly stupid mistake believing I was off camera. I apologize to my wife, family, friends, and coworkers. I believed I was not visible on Zoom. I thought no one on the Zoom call could see me. I thought I'd muted the Zoom video." Muted the video. Maybe obstructed. But why the need? What is with this? Crazy.